Radio City, John Grayson, Rob Ross here with you, episode 220. And Rob, I know we've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, like, you know, New York City trying to become Chicago in a very weird way. But before we even get to any of that, let's do the important stuff first. Your health has been a concern. And when we left off our last episode, you still had some questions about what's going on. How are you feeling?
Well, thank you for asking, first and foremost. I feel okay at the moment, but the fact is, on Thursday, October 10th, I am going to have surgery. It is a non-cutting form of surgery called aquablation, which is water and lasers. It is for those of us who have an enlarged prostate, and in my case, it is indeed enlarged. And what it does is it clears away the excess scar tissue that causes the enlargement. And the hope is that, because it has a 98% success rate, the hope is that it won't shrink the prostate, but it will certainly create enough room so that it will not be pushing up against my bladder, which is the next form of problems in this whole process. It is an overnight stay in the hospital. It should take around the length of time, if not maybe a little longer, a little shorter, as a colonoscopy would be. I will be in the hospital one night, come home on Friday the 11th. And I can go back to work the following Thursday. The only part that's difficult for me to kind of process and digest is that I have to go home with a catheter in me.
Oh, fun.
From Friday. Well, you know, it'll be in me from Thursday through the following Tuesday, when I have to go across Staten Island to my urologist and he'll remove it in his office. So I will not be driving. I will take a car service out there.
Good man, yeah.
But I've made as many preparations as possible as I could, right down to buying dark colored sweat type pants that are loose fitting to accommodate the catheter and the bag. And I know this is very unappealing sounding for those of us, for those of you who are listening, but you know, this is kind of a grim reality.
It's just life, man. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to order groceries because I can't shop and I can't drive. I'm not going to be going out of the house from the time I get home. Apart from all of that, you know, this coming Thursday, I have to go to the hospital to have what they call pre-admission testing. So that's going to be an EKG, blood test, and an x-ray. I don't know if there's anything else that's involved, but I did plan on, like I said, I'm going to order groceries to have them delivered on the Saturday, so that way I won't have to worry about it. I'm going to be very cautious with what I eat over those few days that I have the catheter in me. And I did ask my doctor very pointed questions. The most important is my threshold for pain has diminished greatly as I've gotten older. I just don't handle it as well as I used to. And I asked if there is some, you know, low dosage form of painkillers he could prescribe. And he said, no, because you'll be on antibiotics as well as Tylenol. So I don't want any kind of, you know, combinations, which of course makes sense. I said, well, is there some form of perhaps tranquilizer that you could give me, like a low dose of Xanax, which I took when I flew down to Florida, and subsequently, you know, I was fine. Have we done a show since Florida?
No. So okay, we'll have to talk about Florida later, too. Yeah.
Because it had been a long time since I'd flown, and you know, I just didn't really feel like getting all worked up. So, and it worked beautifully. But again, he said, no, I don't want to give you any kind of medication. So then I asked him, look, as loath as I am to ask, what about CBD gummies? You know, if I buy them to keep calm and maybe to help me sleep, because that could work. So that's exactly what I've done. So I have tried to go over every possible list of precautions and necessities to basically not have to move out of the bed or off the couch for the days that I'm going to be at home till I go out to see him on the Tuesday. But he takes it out on Tuesday the 15th. I'm going to stay home, obviously, that day and the next day just to fully rest, and then I'll go back to work on the Thursday. And yeah, the only real downside to all of this is, for a start, there's going to be at least it's a 6 to 8 week recuperation process, full healing. So there's no heavy lifting. I can't grocery shop. I can't go to the gym, et cetera, et cetera. And there's going to be blood in the urine for a while. So that could clear up within 2 to 4 weeks, which is no different than the aftermath of my biopsy a few years ago. So that's where we're at right now.
Good. Yeah, well, the one thing I want to make sure we underscore is the one word that you did not say in that entire explanation: cancer.
Right. And by the way, before we went ahead and scheduled this, he had me do another full, what do you call it, MRI. And the MRI results were, in fact, no cancer.
Fantastic.
So, yes, we have managed to dodge that bullet. Now, because we've talked about this, I do want to start on breaking news. And that is, it was just announced maybe a half hour ago that Pete Rose has died.
Yeah.
Baseball legend Pete Rose. And I don't care what anybody has to say, that man belonged in the Hall of Fame. You have some of the most vile and repulsive people in the Hall over the years, people who've been given second, third, fourth, and fifth chances in baseball in general right now for some of the most egregious things known to mankind. And all he did was bet on baseball games.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the guys who, from the steroid era, who we know were juicing. I mean, we absolutely 100% know were juicing. What did they do to them? Oh, they made them wait a little longer. That actually had an effect on games, on the gameplay itself, on the talent, and not the talent level, but the strength of the guys who were playing the game. But, you know, we can just make them wait a couple of years to get into the Hall of Fame. Meanwhile, Pete Rose spent his entire life outside.
And Pete Rose was one of the greatest baseball players that ever lived to play the game. He loved that game more than anything. He never went away from it, per se. And if you ever saw him play, which I did on many occasions, I hated him, but he was an incredible baseball player. And if you got to see him, you were fortunate. So fitting tribute, because at the end of a very emotional roller coaster of a day, we saw the most improbable thing happen. And that is the New York Mets, my beloved team, did not Mets. They went into Atlanta to play a doubleheader because, of course, last week with the oncoming hurricane, they had to call the games off. The Mets went in with the season officially over yesterday with the Braves to play a doubleheader to decide whether or not one of them was going to go to the postseason or not. In the first game, the Mets are down 3-0 in the top of the eighth inning and managed to score 6 runs. In the bottom of the eighth inning, of course, they run into a little trouble. It's 6-4. They bring in Edwin Diaz, who, of course, everyone knows I despise. And what does he do? It's 7-6 Atlanta. Then in the top of the ninth inning, Starling Marte gets a base hit. And Francisco Lindor, who, of course, as well everybody knows, I'm not a fan of, steps up to the plate and hits a 2-run home run. And the Mets won the game and wound up in the postseason, winning the wild card. Phenomenal. The second game, which if they would have, this is how it would have played out. If the Mets won one of those two games, they're in the playoffs. If they won both games, they would have knocked the Atlanta Braves out, which would have been kind of sweet justice in a roundabout way. And it would have been the Mets and the Arizona Diamondbacks, along with the San Diego Padres, for the wild card. Well, the Mets didn't really show much of a fight in the second game. They lost 3-0. The Mets are going back to Milwaukee after they just left there yesterday. They go back and play tomorrow at 5:00 to play the Milwaukee Brewers for the wild card. The Braves have to go across the country and play the San Diego Padres. And that knocked out the Arizona Diamondbacks by virtue of the fact that for the season series, the Mets won the season series, thus knocking out the Diamondbacks. So, what a day.
Yeah, really. Well, and meanwhile, here in town, here in Kansas City, we've got the Kansas City Royals. They made it. Not only did they make the playoffs, they made the 5 seed. So they leapfrogged Detroit by way of the tiebreaker, because I think they ended the season either in a dead tie or very, very close to it. So the Royals end up with a 5. And the curiosity is, Vinny Pasquantino, who has been out for, I don't know how long it's been. It's been a good few weeks with a broken thumb on his right hand. And what's going to become of him come playoff time? So is he going to be able to play tomorrow night? We don't yet know. And they're leaving that for a kind of a noontime tomorrow sort of decision, because I think the Royals game starts at 4 here local time. And if they do end up using him, it will almost definitely not be at first base. He will be as a pinch hitter.
DH.
Yeah, right. He'll be in as a pinch hitter, and that's going to be it. But the question remains, and we talked to the television voice of the Kansas City Royals today, And he said that he has seen Pasquantino take batting practice. He looks good. The swing looks good. It doesn't look tentative at all. And the question is going to be how much power, because it's his right thumb, how much power can he get from his right hand swinging the bat? And if he's okay there, that's likely what he'll be, at least for the first series, that will maybe allow Kansas City to get deeper into the playoffs.
I mean, that's the funny thing about with the Mets. Francisco Lindor has been down, of course, for the last week with a back problem, and he shouldn't be playing shortstop. They brought up Luis Angel Acuña, who has just been a godsend, and I'll bet you the Texas Rangers now are really ruining the trade that they made for Max Scherzer, because he just came in out of the box firing on all cylinders. I mean, just phenomenal. But I would rather have Lindor as the DH and have Acuña in the field at shortstop, because he's proven that he can play the position quite amiably. So I'm so tired right now. He plays great shortstop. He's good. He's good. He's really good. So, you know, that also stands to reason, but I don't know what's going to happen, but I could not be happier, because let's face facts. At the start of the season, the Mets were dead in the water. At the end of May, they were basically vying with the Washington Nationals for last place. That they became the best team in baseball from, I think it was that point onward, with the most wins. I mean, just stunning.
Yeah, it's all crazy.
Absolutely stunning. So it's a really joyful moment for us Mets fans. I don't know what's going to happen with Milwaukee, but the fact is they made it in, and, you know, I couldn't be happier. And, you know, it also doesn't hurt the fact that the two big names that they traded last year, Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, did not pitch the required amount of innings for the Mets payment for their contracts when they jettisoned them. They didn't vest. So therefore, the Mets are off the hook for a ton of money, which makes them really comfortable when it comes to going into, if they do in fact take this route, to the free agent market in the offseason, because of course Juan Soto is out there, but, you know, that's a big question mark. Pete Alonso is not having a good year, so his value has diminished immeasurably. And I don't even want to get into the whole somebody should keep him away from a microphone thing now. I mean, this is a guy that I've watched regress over the 4 years, which is a real shame. You know, when he came, just very quickly, when he came to the team in 2019, that phenomenal season, he came in with such a maturity and a poise and a natural sense of leadership. It's like, my God, where has he been? He's this kid, and yet he's got all the leadership skills. He could have been the heir apparent to David Wright. He had that kind of Mark Messier-like quality about him. And he's just turned into a frat boy jerk in the last 4 years. And he says stupid things. And quite frankly, him going to the All-Star game to be in the home run derby competition was, I thought, insulting, because if anyone deserved to go to the All-Star game this year, it was Francisco Lindor.
Sure.
And again, I am not a fan of Lindor's, but I have to, you know, tip my hat to him and the phenomenal way that he's carried this team part of the way this season. A couple of guys have done it, but he's been kind of the main arbiter of all of this. So, and then, of course, we have the Jets, who just jetsed yesterday. It's like, wow.
And so did the Bills. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But I mean, two games that were mirrors of each other. The Georgia Bulldogs on Saturday were down in the first half, 28-0 to Alabama. They came back, they took the lead, and as soon as they took the lead, they coughed up the go-ahead touchdown. And with less than a minute to go, all they had to do is kick the field goal. They could have won it. And he goes wide right. Yesterday, Zuerlein could have gone, you know, gotten the game winner.
Yeah.
And he goes wide right.
Right. Yeah. Well, don't talk to me about wide right. But, you know, we do have that trademarked. But yeah, I mean, I had been saying for the first three games, I mean, the Bills come out and they just wreck teams, but they were wrecking bad teams. And I said, talk to me when we beat somebody good. We go on the road, we play somebody good, and we end up with a 35-10 loss. I mean, the team looked flat. And clearly, I think a lot of it was the fact that they had just pummeled Jacksonville as badly as they did. And there's a hangover from that. And then you go on the road and play a tough team with a running back in Travis Henry, who has just been the Bills' kryptonite dating back to when he was still in Tennessee. So now with him in Baltimore, first run, 83-yard touchdown, and it just got worse from there. So,
I mean, you know, with the Jets yesterday, it's like Denver is not a good team. Denver's an undisciplined team.
Right.
But you just said the magic word. The Jets looked flat. They looked tired. Aaron Rodgers did not look like he had it all together yesterday either. And he got hit, and you could see he was kind of like, ow, afterwards. He was laboring a little bit. So
it hurts when you get old.
Yeah, no kidding. Know? I mean, we're also in the home stretch now of preseason hockey. I'm going to actually check to see where we're at, because at last look, the Rangers were down 2-0, but hey, they were down 4-1 the other night and came back and beat the Islanders 6-4. So where are we at with the Rangers? It's still 2-0 in the second period. Nothing really, like I said, nothing relevant. It's preseason hockey, you know,
right.
Who really cares?
The fact that we've got hockey at all, good enough for me.
Exactly. I mean, it's going to make the transition out of baseball smoother. So Florida, the long story short on that was, and folks, if you're listening, I cannot thank John and Jen enough for giving me all their advice and places to visit, because we hit a lot of those. And
oh, good.
It was
you're
just
welcome.
The most amazing time. Everything that could go right did go right. That's how I kind of quantify this trip. You know, from getting off the first of all, both flights to and from were early. You know, so that was a really nice thing. Getting off the plane and finding out that our car had been upgraded free of charge, then getting to the hotel and finding our room was upgraded free of charge, and we had the most magnificent view of the water, to find that there was a private beach right at the hotel. All I had to do was just go outside, and there it was. And it was this beautiful little beach that led to the waterway, and there's a dock there that had you know, boats and you know, paddle boats and ski-doos and you know, just
where did you stay again?
We stayed at the Westin Tampa Bay, the one on Courtney Campbell Causeway.
Right, you were on the causeway. Okay, yeah.
I mean, it was just fantastic, and we never got stuck in traffic driving around. And you know, for folks like Liz and I, you know, we like to do certain things to have ourselves prepared for a visit. And one thing we like to do is find like a grocery store or Target or something. Lo and behold, because I got lost coming out of the airport, I get off at one off ramp, and I'm going around to make the U-turn to get back on the opposite direction, and I see the beacon of Target right there. I'm like, oh, jackpot. And it's got a Target. There's a gas station right there, so we know where we can go get gas, and there's a Dunkin' Donuts. And the folks in Target could not have been more incredibly nice, and they were so helpful. And they said, well, look, and I said, you don't by any chance know if there's a Publix around here? As a matter of fact, just go out and make a right, and about 5 lights from now, you'll hit the Publix. I'm jackpot again. So it just turned out to be great. But Tampa's a beautiful city, and you know, we went to the museum there, and it was just really beautiful and spacious and quiet. We went to Sparkman Wharf, which is a hoot, because when you go around to all the little food kiosks, they're all built out of old shipping containers.
Yeah,
and they're all painted different colors. And we had the most fantastic seafood. There's this great little seafood place there. But there was one place on my list of places to go to, you know, for food stuff, called what was it called? It was a chicken and donut place.
Okay.
And they had this donut, the donut of death, as I called it in the end. It was this beautiful, and I mean just enormous raised donut covered in peanut butter. And no, it had chocolate frosting, and it had it was peanut butter frosting with Reese's Pieces. And it was, as a friend of mine said when he saw the picture, he goes, great, that picture just gave me type 2 diabetes.
No kidding. Yeah, right.
It was just, you know, I worked my way through it, and Liz was in hysterics watching me. She goes, are you okay? I'm like, I don't know yet. I don't know if I'm going to get through this.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it's a good thing you went when you did, because we've been getting pictures out of, you know, from all of our friends down in Tampa and in St. Petersburg and that entire area. In fact, Robbie Rist from the Brady Bunch is one of them. And you know, he lives in the area now, and showed us, he sent a picture of a boat, like a big Bayliner, you know, like a cabin cruiser in the middle of a park. And
there were sharks in the street of Tampa.
Oh yeah.
I kid you not. I saw film footage of that. I was like, my God.
There was where we normally stay is out on St. Pete Beach, which is west of where you were, right on the Gulf. And there's a historic old hotel called the Thunderbird that opened up in 1957, and we love it down there. We go there, and we saw drone footage. The Gulf Pinellas County, which is St. Petersburg, Clearwater, Largo, et cetera, has a barrier island that goes all the way down the edge of Pinellas County on the Gulf side called Sand Key. And it's where St. Pete Beach is. It's where Indian Rocks is, Reddington Shores, all of that area. And the main drag that goes right down the center of it is Gulf Boulevard. Gulf Boulevard is feet deep in sand. They were showing some of the hotels along Indian Rocks Beach, and they the ones that have pools out and back, which is common because you can swim in the pool and look out at the Gulf. The pools are now full of sand. 8-foot pools full of sand. Sand up 3 feet on the doors on the back of these places. It's just incredible how, because it was all storm surge. So they didn't get a lot of wind, but boy, did they get the water coming in. And it's caused untold millions of dollars worth of damage. So you saw it at exactly the right time.
Yeah. I mean, we went, we drove all the way down to St. Pete. I forgot the name of the town. But it's a very, it's a small, it's not, it's in St. Petersburg, but it has a different name.
Like South Pasadena, someplace like that?
Yes, that's exactly
was that what it was? It was. Okay, yeah.
That's where we went on a 3-hour cruise down into the Gulf of Mexico. And we went to, I forgot the name of the island. It was this little tiny island where there's tons of sand dollars. And I've never felt sand like this. I actually shot some video footage of the sunset. And it was just the most breathtaking thing. And that ride was just beyond exquisite, you know? And
I'm going to take two guesses and we'll see if I'm right on either one of these. Anna Maria Island?
No.
Or Coquina Key?
No.
Oh,
no.
Neither one of those. Okay. Yeah. There's a bunch, but yeah, those are two of the more popular ones.
It was very
ones.
Tiny. It was just near a nature preserve, a protected nature preserve, but it was just so unbelievably beautiful and calm, and the people were just so nice. And, you know, and one of the biggest kicks that I got was, you know, before our trip, I had spoke, because this was a serious thing. I had asked John and Jen about, you know, where should we go for Cuban sandwiches? Because that was like the priority, because Cuban sandwiches in Tampa are different from the ones elsewhere, because the key to those, of course, is
roast pork. The bread.
The Genoa salami.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the most important thing, because you don't get Genoa salami on other Cuban sandwiches. It's only in Tampa.
Yeah, and if they're doing pulled pork, by the way, that is also not an authentic Cuban. It's got to be sliced roast pork that just falls apart.
Correct. And, you know, there's two places. There's the Columbia and
Columbia and the Silver Ring.
And of course, there was but the place that we wound up going to, Flan Factory.
Oh, okay. All right.
This little tiny place that you would never be, you have to be on the lookout. And because I was driving, I said to Liz, be on the lookout. And it turns out it's this little, it looks like a little cottage in the back of what looks like a driveway, like a front, you know, gravel driveway. The people in there were just incredibly nice. And the sandwiches were just so unreal. And I mean unreal. And they served it with cilantro slaw, which, you know, if you like coleslaw, you're probably used to what is known as industrial. You know, it's kind of always soggy and it's got a little bit too much of the mayo based watery. This had the most crisp, fresh, two different colors of cabbage. And that cilantro aioli was just sublime. I got to tell you,
that's
it was
great.
Surreal, absolutely surreal. So, yeah, we just had the most magnificent, relaxing time. And that's what it was all about, because for the full week that we were down there, I didn't think about, you know, the upcoming surgery or my health or any of that. And it's not like I overate. If anything, we were up at sunrise every day, watched the sun come up over the causeway, which was stunning. Have breakfast as soon as the restaurant downstairs, Aqua, which is really, really nice. Open up light breakfast, you know, fruit, piece of, you know, whole grain toast, coffee, juice. And then we would go to the gym in the hotel and work out for at least an hour. That was a way to spend a perfect vacation. You know, it really, really helped me mentally as well as physically and, you know, emotionally, because I hadn't been anywhere in 8 years. So,
yeah,
all in all, I'm feeling okay. And I'm, you know, I'm doing my best to try and, you know, steel myself for what will happen on the 10th. You know, I'm cautiously hopeful. You know, I've had a colonoscopy before, so I'm not so much afraid of being put under like I had been that first time. So, you know, it's whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I'm not trying to be maudlin about it, but, you know, I will trust the doctor since he has done this many times before. And, you know, if you read up on aquablation, the success rate is wonderful. He even said to me when I saw him last 2 weeks ago, at this point, he said, the great thing is once it's over with, you will feel better and you will notice that you'll be feeling better and you won't even need to take Flomax anymore.
Excellent.
That's huge, you know, because after an elongated period of time, medication is not a great thing to be having to keep taking. So
tell me about it. I take a disturbing number of pills every day now. So, well, that's great. I'm so glad you had a good time down in Florida. And like you said, I mean, it puts you in the right mind space to be able to have, you know, handle everything that's coming up in the not too distant. Now, you know that I spent almost 20 years living in Illinois, and when we get to politics in the state of Illinois, it's like whenever you win office, especially if you win out of Chicago, normally they start planning your indictment party on the day you take office. But New York isn't really like that, or at least it hasn't been in a while. And yet just days ago, your favorite and mine, Mayor Eric Adams, is celebrating his own indictment. What the hell, dude? He was the chief of police.
Well, I mean, first of all, he's de Blasio's successor. So do I really need to say anything right. more than that? If there's any one human being on this planet that deserves to be indicted and then, you know, basically drawn, quartered and have the parts arrested, it would be de Blasio. But,
sure.
you know, Mayor Mushmouth is not far behind. Well, the reason why they've indicted him is because they have found that he, you know, he took an enormous amount of, quote, trips on the coffers of others. Now, here's the question at hand. Did you notice that this happened right after he finally came to the verbal realization that all the illegals that are in New York City that have been causing all the problems in New York City wasn't such a good idea and that maybe this shouldn't be a sanctuary city? Stop sending them. Oh, he did the cardinal sin of all cardinal sins. You went against your own party's politics. First of all, dude, you were the one who said we're a sanctuary city and we're proud. That was started by your predecessor and you carried it on. So as far as I'm concerned, let the punishment fit the crime.
You made your bed.
Now,
yeah.
The fear, though, is that if they oust this lumphead, even worse, one of the dumbest, most useless pieces of garbage to walk the streets, Jumaane Williams, would take over. He's just completely worthless.
I know nothing of Jumaane Williams.
Good. And hopefully no one ever will. Because what would have to happen, according to law and the city charter, he, as the, quote, acting mayor, would have to call for an emergency election. The thought of emergency election, of course, has Andrew Cuomo chomping at
sure.
the bit.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, he's going to run for mayor if that does indeed happen. So, John, we are screwed no matter how you look at it.
Oh, goody.
You know, my little slice of heaven here in Staten Island, thank God for the fact that we get screwed no matter what. So, you know, it's a no-win. This city has got to be taken out of the hands of the Democrats because Democrats in New York do not know what the hell they're doing. And they've proven it for the past now. Oh, let's see. De Blasio, two terms, destroy the city, undid everything that Ed Koch, Rudy Giuliani, and Michael Bloomberg did, making this safe, obviously the most viable, powerful city in the world, made it a toilet. And then Adams has just ramped up, making it an even bigger toilet. Now it's an overflowing latrine.
Yeah, and again, stupidest thing in the entire world, taking a bunch of vacations with campaign finance money. I mean, come on, man. If you're going to crime, at least make it sexy. You know, not boring shit.
Look, I mean, there's only one guy who knew how to do it and do it right, and that was me, your favorite president. It's time for one big dick's dead eye view.
Absolutely. So that's the fun that's going on in New York. Meantime, we here in town in Kansas City, we're dealing with a rash of burglaries and vandalism toward businesses in a couple of areas of town. And it's interesting because they're areas of town that have not had that much of a problem with it in the past. Now, the good news on this is that for the last few years in a row, we have been setting records for murders. That's actually off a lot, but it's being replaced with property crime, and it's driving the businesses crazy. And worse than that, it's driving the businesses out of business. There are actually businesses who have said, look, my insurance dropped me. I can't afford new insurance. I can't have my, I can't have my closers worried about getting across the parking lot without getting robbed. I'm not doing this anymore. And they have shut their doors. And the mayor's freaking out because that means, I mean, that's losing tax base and it's losing businesses. And that looks bad. And we've got the World Cup coming here in 2 years. I mean, there are a lot of things on the horizon, and it's a good time to be in Kansas City. But somebody has got to get a hold of what's going on. And we still have, unfortunately, a pissing match going on between the police department, the mayor's office, and the prosecutor. The mayor's going to be term limited out. The prosecutor's about to lose her job as well. And that's going to leave a new police chief. She's only been on the job for about a year and a half now to deal with mayor and prosecutor. And we don't know who either one of those is going to be. In the meantime, county government has a massive problem going on right now because they only do the tax assessments, like property taxes here, every couple of years. Every 2 years they do it. And there are two state laws that affect this, and they're in conflict with each other. One of them says you can only raise any given property's tax assessment by 15% from 2 years ago to this one. The other law says all tax assessments have to be accurate, fair and accurate. That's the wording that they use. So the problem was that the new tax assessor in 2023 came in and said, all right, the assessments from 2021 and perennially up until now have been dramatically lower than they should have been. And property values were all on the rise. We remember what happened, you know, a couple of years ago when property values started soaring through the roof, when Zillow screwed everything up. So people's property taxes were going up like 150, 200% in some cases. It was crazy, which is against the law. But the prosecutor, or not the prosecutor, the tax assessor and the county manager, effectively, who, by the way, is Frank White, former Kansas City Royal. They're both saying, no, we have to do accurate assessments. This is what we feel is fair and accurate. And it's just been an absolute debacle. And it has made everyone on the Missouri side, thankfully I live on the Kansas side, but it's made everybody in the Missouri side mistrust city government, county government. The system is just, it is rattling. It's not falling apart yet, but it's rattling and it's bad. So, you know, the county board is at odds with Frank White, and the tax assessor is maintaining she did nothing wrong, and people are going absolutely apeshit right now because people are looking at potentially losing their houses over taxes. It's crazy.
Jesus. What a time to be alive in the United States.
No kidding. And those of us in Johnson County, Kansas, just look over across the border and go, what are you doing? You know, we've got our own problems here, but it's a lot worse on the KC side.
I've yet to figure out what's happening in New York because every day is just another. Basically, if you want to be able to navigate your way around New York, if you are like me and you live in the suburbs of New York City, you just want to basically duck and run, get to and from, and that's it. You know, there's nothing that would make me go into the city otherwise besides work. That's it. You know, no interest in seeing anything, shopping anywhere there. I'll do it all here, you know, or dare I say it, I'll do it online because, but like you were saying before, businesses are going out left, right, and center. You know, places that I've purchased from even ongoing after the ones that I used to go to in my younger days, places that I still will buy from are all closing down, you know, because they're all retiring. You know, they don't want to, their kids don't want to do it or whatever the case may be. It's just they're all shutting down. So,
yeah, it's rough.
We're basically enslaved now to, I mean, I have no problems obviously with Target, but we're enslaved to the likes of, you know, Target and Costco and Walmart. If there's a Walmart near you, we don't have them in New York,
but, and Amazon,
you know, and Amazon, and that's it. You know, your options have become very, very limited. There's very little in the way of variety, you know, even just going to a mall is a dying enterprise, you know, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah. In the entire area, in the entire bi-state area, we have two malls left. That's it. And one of them is, I won't say it's on the brink of failure. I will say it has a terrible, terrible reputation because of people getting, you know, robbed in the parking lot, and they've got problems with teenagers running around and they can't get a handle on it. So, well, they're actually talking about putting a police substation in there, and that's not a bad idea.
Sadly enough, you know, the place that we opened up here right down the street from the Empire Outlets, which opened up during the pandemic of all things, you know, one of their last anchors from that period is closing. Nordstrom Rack is closing in December.
Yeah.
I mean, they're, you know, we've got almost nothing left in that mall. It's or outlet mall, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, what, a Nike store and an H&M, the last of the Gap and Banana Republics on Staten Island. And those are, you know, outlet stores. We no longer have regular Gaps in the mall or Banana Republic. It's just, it's embarrassing. It really is. You know? I mean, this was, with all the fanfare that came along with it, you know, it's just been an absolute unmitigated disaster.
I hate to go from one kind of meh to another kind of meh, but I have to. I want to get into TV a little bit, because I don't know if you've been, let me actually have you start. If there's anything that you've seen recently, have you been watching any tube, and has anything caught your eye?
Believe it or not, all I seem to watch nowadays, it's been ever since we were in Florida. I watch just reruns of Forensic Files on Headline News Network. Obviously, First 48, you know, yeah. the true crime police procedurals. And I watch a lot of I started watching Magnolia Network by default, because they have brand new episodes of Bargain Mansions, which is shot in Kansas City.
Yep.
And one of my other favorites, Beachfront Bargain Renovation, Island Life, or, you know, any one of these, the where people go and try and find themselves like a vacation home, or, you know, that
variations on the House Hunters theme.
Right. Yeah. But then there's the version that has the renovations, like it's almost like a part two. You see like the full hour instead of a half hour.
Right.
It's just very relaxing and very calm. And the other thing that I watch is on Saturday mornings religiously, there are a bunch of fishing shows on.
I'm watching fishing.
Yeah. Watching fishing Discovery Channel.
Yep.
You know, so, and my favorite, of course, is, you know, Bass Pro Shops, Major League Fishing, World Series of Fishing. That's every Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. Oh, the other show that I love is The Food That Built America on History Channel.
Love that show.
That is such a great show.
Yes, it is. And by the way, the line about, I'm not even fishing, I'm watching fishing, that's an old Brian Regan bit. And he goes, he was talking about watching, you know, one of the bass fishing shows. And he goes, they got to the end and I'm watching the credits and I see writer. I'm like, boy, talk about an easy job. It's like, what's that guy sitting in an office somewhere going, she's a beauty. You know, it's like, there's, what the hell is a writer for on a fishing show?
There's something about watching these shows, especially the best, you know, World Series of Fishing.
Yeah.
On a Saturday morning at 7 o'clock for 2 hours while you're having your coffee, it immediately mellows you and sets you up for a good day ahead. That's the only way I can really, really view it. So otherwise, there is absolutely nothing on television I have any remote interest in whatsoever.
I was actually looking forward to something, and for a couple of reasons. I saw an article about, you know, it was one of these clickbait articles, and it's like, Stephen King raves about the new Netflix thing. And I was like, okay, I like Stephen King. Sure, let's give it a shot. So I clicked through. And the one thing that I was really pleased about is that it's not a limited series. It's not a mini series. It's a movie. You know what I mean? Like Netflix used to have. It's just a movie. It's, you know, a couple hours worth and you're done. Because I'll tell you, the one thing that I've noticed, and you know, people have made the jokes before about the limited series, and it's like, if you ask somebody if they want to watch an 11-hour movie, they'll look at you like you lost your mind. But they'll sit there for 11 hours watching episode after episode of a, quote, limited series. Well, what the hell is that? It's an 11-hour movie. So, and what I've noticed about those is that because it's 11 hours long, they drag. The pacing is so bloody slow. It's terrible. And so I was like, fine, great. Give me a movie. It's called Rebel Ridge, and it's on Netflix. It's doing very well. The idea is a kind of a lift of the Rambo thing, where you got a guy who is wronged by the system. And in this case, he's wronged by the system because he's black. And he's riding his bike through this small town, and a cop car is following him, and he doesn't know it because he's got earbuds in. So the cop car eventually hits him, and that's where things start to go wrong. It deals with civil asset forfeiture, which is this bullshit where they can, if they find you with a lot of money, they can just take it from you because they can say, well, we suspect that this must be drug money. Well, that's what happens to this guy. And like Rambo, it's the story of him kicking ass and taking names, you know, and eventually, I'm sure, winning. I say I'm sure because we didn't even finish it. We got about halfway through and I looked at Jen and said, are you enjoying this? And she was like, it's not bad. And I was like, you know what? That's exactly my feeling about this. It's not bad, but get to the flipping point. Let's go. Let's, you know, and it just didn't. We will eventually finish it. I will say the guy who's the lead actor is a guy I don't know, but he's excellent. His acting talent is not in question here. And the writing is fairly good. And there are some talented actors that are in this with him. But it just is having a real hard time getting off the ground.
The problem with TV shows like this in general, and some movies even, is the fact that they're always trying to hammer a message across. And what they do is they go into so much unnecessary depth and detour and detail. And again, more importantly, there's an agenda. And so by doing that, it takes you out of the what's going to happen next, because that's the whole point. You want to see things unfold.
Yeah.
You know? It's funny you mentioned Rambo because, you know, I've never seen any of the Rambo movies until very recently. Like Showtime seems to be putting on a lot of the reruns of Rambo. And I thought, you know, there was one Saturday morning where we weren't doing anything and I just started watching First Blood, you know?
Yeah. Like, the very first one.
Bad. Yep. And it's quick, you know, that's the other
one
thing. It's quick.
1 hour, 33 minutes, one hour. It's 93 minutes long. That's it.
You know, and it, you know, I like Stallone. I have zero problems. That's why I like the Untouched. Was it what's the ones that the movies that he was just doing? He was like, oh my God.
Now I can't remember either. I know what you're talking about, but yeah, I can't think of it.
Oh my God. Cause I just saw the fourth one and they're kind of funny. It's him and Jason Statham and Andy Garcia and Dolph Lundgren of all people.
Of course. Right.
Destroy you.
I will break you.
Yeah. I must break you. That's it. That's the one. You know, it's hilarious. The Expendables. That's it. The Expendables.
Right. Right.
And they're fun and they're fast. And that's, you know, if I want a movie that's going to be lengthy, if there's going to be a story, it better be good. Like I rediscovered, I don't know if I mentioned this in one of the previous shows or just in talking to you, but one of my favorite movies of the last decade was on, and I forgot how much I loved it when I saw it. So subsequently, I not only did I get back into the movie, I bought the soundtrack because the music was just so tremendously good and it lives with you. 2014 movie called Chef, starring Jon Favreau.
Absolutely love that movie.
And, you know, that was the movie that inspired Liz and I to go on our last two vacations, because as they're doing the trip, I said to her, okay, which one do we want to go to first? New Orleans or Austin? And she goes, New Orleans. That was that.
There we go. Yep.
you know, it's just such a great movie, but it's lengthy enough, but it keeps you riveted because you're taken on not just the ride, but you're taken on the actual journey of this person as you watch him evolve from a kind of a dick to, you know, a really likable character, you
yeah,
know,
and you're a dad
pulling for him.
Right. Yeah. Because he's trying to become a better dad and a better person, the whole thing. And it just works. And again, not a long movie. It didn't have to be. It said what it needed to say and it got out. On the subject of movies, by the way, and I know we'll get into music here in a second because we've lost some absolute giants over the last week. But I found out this morning, John Ashton, who played the older cop in Beverly Hills Cop.
Was it Sergeant Taggart?
Yeah, Taggart. Right. Exactly. He died over the weekend.
Over the weekend. He also played the harried father of Eric Stoltz in Some Kind of Wonderful.
Yes, he did. That's right. Yes. Another one of my favorite movies of all time. So, yeah, sad news there. But, I mean, out of the world
of
music.
We lost Chris Christopherson.
Over the weekend. And that was on the heels of J.D. Souther. I mean.
And Dame Maggie Smith.
Right. And so, I mean, with the songwriters, I mean, who's left? Who's left out of the Laurel Canyon scene? You effectively have Jackson Brown and, boy, who else? Joni, I guess. That's it. Everybody else is gone.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, numbers don't lie and age adds up. So,
yeah. I mean, what was Chris Christopherson? Was he 78?
83 or 88. I'm not sure.
It might have been 88. Yeah, you're right. It was, yeah, he was 88.
He had a lot of very serious health issues over the last few years.
Right.
So that's not, it's not too surprising. So,
and with J.D. Souther, I mean, a guy who, you know, it's kind of curious with both of them. Their performances.
Yep. Yeah. He was 88.
Their performances were, I mean, both of them were accomplished performers and musicians and all of that stuff, but they're known so much more for the stuff that they write, that that they wrote, that other people ended up performing. And I mean, music history, where would we be without the Eagles' live version of Seven Bridges Road? I mean, I don't care what you think about the Eagles. That is magic.
Well, I mean, it's going to sound weird, but I think we might have talked about it a couple of years ago when he came back out. But, you know, J.D. Souther and Glenn Frey, who also is no longer with us.
Yeah.
You know, they had a band called Long Branch Penny Whistle. Their first foray, they went after they met, they formed this group and they put out an album which gained no traction, but it's actually really good. And you can hear what you could actually hear, like, the seeds planted.
Yeah.
Because there's some great songs on that album. That's the beauty of it. You go back and you discover this little gem that's, you know, dug out of the soil, so to speak. And, you know, I mean, the fact that he wrote so many of these songs with the Eagles, I mean, he was in effect the sixth Eagle, well, or the fifth, you know, before Don Felder and all that, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, he was in effect, you know, he was an Eagle by proxy.
Yeah, right. Right. And so, yeah, I mean, to lose talent like that in a very short period of time, it's sad. And it makes you wonder. I mean, at times like this, you do start looking around at how old some of these guys are. Who was it that just Aerosmith, between the last time we talked and now, have quit touring? They're done.
They had to quit touring,
Because they just can't physically do it anymore.
Because Steven Tyler's voice has, you know, has some very serious, and it's better that he maintains his health than, you know, try and go out and sing every night.
Oh, absolutely.
REO Speedwagon
also just quit. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, look, the reality is that there's never been a handbook or any kind of blueprint for what happens when you get to a certain age in rock and roll, you know,
yeah.
Pure and simple. I mean, look, I love Paul McCartney, but he can't sing and he should not be out there. He shouldn't be out there doing this to the audience because he just can't do it anymore.
Meanwhile, you know, I have to bring this up because I just don't get it. They announced on the heels of their already sold out European tour that Oasis is going to be touring the States. They're going to play Chicago. They're playing
the Meadowlands. MetLife Stadium.
Yeah. I mean,
first of all, they were a flash in the pan.
Thank you.
A minor hit with Wonderwall, and that was it. Okay.
And Champagne Supernova. Yeah. And that was,
which I actually liked a lot more.
Same here.
And of course, in the war of Blur versus Oasis, I was team Blur. There's not even a question about that. But Oasis think that they're going to sell out MetLife Stadium. If they pull that off, well, good for them. But first of all, it's not even Oasis. It's the Gallagher brothers fronting Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. It's none of the other guys from Oasis.
Right.
So that's another ripoff factor.
So the big deal with this is the two brothers who hate each other like poison can be on stage together again after 15 years? Big whoop.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, I never rated Oasis that highly to begin with. So that's, you know, and it's not a knock. They've got some good songs, but they weren't a favorite of mine, you know. It was also a very different time and a different mindset for me as well. But, you know, it's like I hear them and I'm like, eh, it's okay. You know, I wouldn't turn off Champagne Supernova because it's a good song. I do like that one. But if I hear Wonderwall or you know, Don't Look Back in Anger or any of that stuff, I, you know, turn it off. The only other songs by them I really liked was What's the Story, Morning Glory Itself. I like that one.
You see, I
like
Go
Let It Out. That's a good song, too.
But the thing is, you know, okay, I lost interest in David Coverdale and anything that he wanted to do the day that he decided he wanted to be Robert Plant. Well, Noel Gallagher wanted to be John Lennon his entire life and thinks he is. And so it's like, okay, I have no interest. There already was one of those. You know, we already had a John Lennon and he was great.
You know, we've had now a generation, two generations at least, of Xeroxes, and they're bad Xerox. And now we're at least the Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox, you know, and it just, I'm at the end of my 50s. Do you think for one second I would ever even consider seeing a band like Green Day? No.
But on the other hand,
I never liked them.
Well, right.
I never liked them because the minute I heard them, I was like, Jesus, it was called Suspect Device by Stiff Little Fingers. You know, it's like they were a much better band and you know, they were of their time. Green Day came along 20 years too late.
And they also started to take themselves too seriously. I liked Green Day with the first two hits. Those were good songs. They were fun to listen to and then forget. And then
they started
American Idiot.
Yeah, they started thinking they were more than what they were, yep. You know.
They're a good pop rock band. That's what they are.
The last time I thought they had something that was imminently hummable was a silly song, which they were masters of silliness, was Geek Stink Breath.
Yeah.
You know, that was a good song because of the way it was constructed. But I mean, I look at them, I'm like, God, you guys are such a bad cartoon.
But if I want that, though, I will go and watch a band that knows they're a cartoon and loves it, because I've seen OK Go in concert. And you know what? It was fantastic.
They know that they do their shtick. It's kind of like if you could go, OK, you want to go see a band that's a cartoon and they know it, go back to the earlier days and go see the Dickies. Right. They were so much fun and they were brilliant and they were incredible musicians, you know?
Yeah.
But again, that's of a time, you know, I'm not going to be caught dead at this age seeing, and to be honest with you, I don't think I'm going to be seeing any more bands anyway, because my hearing doesn't take it very well anymore anyhow. So I think I'm retiring from going to see bands. You know, it's funny, the DBs just toured because, and this is where we're going to get into the music for just a brief moment, folks, because this is the fun part. They just did, ostensibly a brief final reunion tour, because the first two albums, Stance for Decibels and the most glorious album, one of the most glorious albums ever released in the history of music, Repercussion, is coming back out again for the first time in the United States ever, both as vinyl, but they also have been, you know, remastered and redone on CD, which is just fantastic. But, you know, I couldn't go to the last show because it was on, I think, a Tuesday night in New Jersey. Standing venue, not seated, and I just don't physically have the capability for it anymore. I can't stand at a show for too long. I'm sure my hearing would have been able to take it for the DBs, but you know, the bottom line is you physically can't do this for too long a period of time. You just can't. The only exception I might make to that rule, exceptions, I will put it plurally, is one, if the bongos were to play, of course, because they're my friends and I love those guys, and you know, if they said, hey, we're playing, come see us, I would probably do it. And if, and this is the biggest if in the world, because we're coming up on it in 2026, if the Punchline were to get back together again, that might be the only other impetus I would have. Yeah. And I would do it because it's only right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pure and simple. There's no need for posturing or any of that kind of stuff. If they were to somehow get in touch or something and say, hey, let's do it for the 40th anniversary, I would absolutely do it.
I hope that happens. I really do. I will come up. I will come to New York if that happens. Now, I do have to ask you real quick, because last time we talked, Paul Weller's new album had just dropped within a couple of weeks after our last conversation. Correct. And you said, you know, it's not his best work, but it's good. It's solid. Now that you've had a chance to let it live with you for a couple of months, where are you with it?
I'm not listening to it at all.
Really?
I'm not listening to Paul Weller at all. And I will keep this very, very simple. Paul Weller has been my hero since 1979, 1980, possibly next to Paul McCartney and Pete Townsend, the biggest musical influence in my life. But I went to see him recently at a theater in Brooklyn, and I left seven songs into the set after something he did on stage profoundly shocked me and angered me. And I wasn't alone. And so when I saw the other members of the audience leaving too, I thought, okay, I'm not in the wrong here. And I'm going to leave it at that, because it's fair not enough. Worth the aggravation. You know what happened, but I mean, you know, it's just not worth the aggravation. But the one word that came up from everybody was betrayal. And I think that's a good way of putting it, and we'll leave it at that. And so Paul Weller, unfortunately, I just won't be listening to him anymore, and I will not be buying his records anymore. And that's just the way it goes sometimes in life. You know, you got to let go of a hero. So, but at the same time, you know, the two DBs reissues, just glorious. And if you never had the chance, now's your opportunity to find two absolute gems. I mean, I can go on for hours about how great Repercussion is. As a matter of fact, in the press release for the re-release of Repercussion, one of the pull quotes happened to come from an article that was written and published in Popdose in 2014. And the genius who wrote it said something about, this is perfection. And of course, he was right. And the genius is me.
Because you always are right.
Exactly. So, of course, I'm always right. But I mean, when it comes to this album, I can't be even half right. I'm completely right about this. Right? This record is a perfect record. This is one of those rare moments, like Revolver, like Kilimanjaro by The Teardrop Explodes, like Murmur by REM. A perfect album. An album has to read like a book. And of course, it's an album, so it's side one and side two. This album, the version that I had, because there are two different track runnings of this, track running orders, the version I have is a perfect novel. It really is. It just, you read it perfectly. You listen to it. The songs flow. There's just such a cadence to all of it that it works in such spectacular fashion, that the songs are so well crafted and so well executed, and they're all different and they bounce off of one another. And, you know, the first album, I've often said, you know, it's kind of more like Chris Stamey's band, you know, and Peter Holsapple just happens to come up with the trump cards on it because Black and White is on there. And, Big Brown Eyes is on there, and Moving in Your Sleep is on there. But of course, the song that got me into the DBs and hooked me into them was Bad Reputation, which is just a fucking masterpiece. I mean, that's from your debut album. Okay. So that's summer of 81 when I first heard it on WSIA radio, and I ran out and bought it, which it was a shock to me that they're a New York band, but it's an import album only.
Right.
Fast forward to Repercussion coming out here early 82 and me getting it home. And this is Holsapple's shining moment. I mean, it's like, Jesus, if you thought Bad Reputation was a great song, the minute you hear Neverland, it's like osmosis. That song just goes into you and stays with you for life. You know it, every single element of that song. But also on there's Chris Stamey's, one of the most cinematic, glorious moments of music I've ever heard in my life. It still gives me chills to this day. It's a song called From a Window to a Screen. Now, pithy wordsmithing aside, when you hear the lyrics, you are absolutely, your heart is torn out of you because you see it, you feel it, you're there. Wine in plastic cups, listening to the wind, I will tell you everything, where do I begin? Someone said, some would say we were friends, I won't make that mistake again. Careless at the start, cautious at the end. Ives is on the stereo. What's the next line? I remember when someone said, what happened? I won't make that mistake again. And the music fits, the mood and the music and the lyrics fit so perfectly. And it's just one of the most gorgeous things. I actually got to see Holsapple and Stamey do that song when they did one of their acoustic sets at the in fact, the last show that I saw at the old City Winery in the loft, and I wept. I mean, it was one of those moments that made me cry. Yeah. Because it's like the beauty of that. It just like I said before, it lives with you forever, you know. And I've actually, you know, when you've been through it, the whole wine in plastic cups and listening to the wind, you're there with someone that you love in a romantic scene, and just a very short time later, she's gone, and you can't figure out what it was, and it was, oh, you were just friends. Like, you know, it gives you a little moment of perspective in life. So there's my musical interlude, because I haven't been listening to much of anything else except the old Capitol records by the Beatles, because the American releases just sound so much better. And yes, by the way, folks, for Christmas this year, Universal is releasing the original mono Capitol albums on vinyl.
Excellent.
Now, if they release them in stereo with the, you know, voices coming out of one speaker and music coming out of the other, I'm going to go for that one, because I always love that because of the cheesiness of it.
Yep.
But yeah, the original, and they're doing it with the original, you know, inner sleeves of, you know, if you like the Beatles, you'll love this new record by Nat King Cole and Matt Monro and Patti Page and, you know, Judy Garland live at Carnegie Hall and all of that on the old black Capitol label with the rainbow swirl around the edges, you know, the way it was originally released. So that's something to look forward to if you're one of those hardcore Beatle completists.
Fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, and next time we get together, we're going to go back into something we haven't done in around forever because you just gave me our in our heads for the next iteration.
221, right?
Yeah, because you mentioned that seeing that song performed live actually had you in tears. The last time that happened to me, and it actually put part of the band into tears as well, they all were, you know, by the end of the song, just sobbing into their towels, was The Butcher's Tale, Western Front 1914, when we went and saw the zombies
yeah.
About 15 years ago.
We're going to have then a lot of them, because there have been times when I have, especially in the last, I'd say, 10 or 12 years where I've gone to shows and have just been blown away by what, my God, I never thought I'd ever see this.
Yes.
So yeah. So write this down so we don't forget it, because we're old and we forget stuff all the time.
It will
so
be on way, the sheet.
Episode 221, In Our Heads, songs that made you cry.
Yeah.
And, when you heard them live.
And I'll tell you, you know, the oddity about that is that when that song was performed, you had Rod Argent on the keys. And he was actually playing this old like barrel organ from 1914. I mean, he actually had it on stage with him. It was amazing. But he's also decided that he's going to hang it up.
He had a stroke.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, he said, I will immediately have to cease touring. Yep. And so, of course, that's heartbreaking. But at least he's still with us.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, I mean, that's really the only thing that matters at this point.
What a great point.
You know, they've so many of these people that we've loved, they've given us so many years of music. You know, let's not be more selfish than we have to be. You know, they've given us a catalog.
What's the cliche? Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened.
Because it happened. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it is true. You know, and the fact is, you do a disservice whether you're a member of the band or, you know, you used to be in the band. If when you kick it to the point of becoming irrelevant and people roll their eyes, that's when you really should get out of the game, you know?
Yeah, great place to leave it. Rob Ross, always a pleasure, my friend. Great getting back with you again. So glad that your health is looking up and that, you know, even though you've got some things coming that might not be all that much fun, it could have been a whole lot worse. And you had a great time in Florida, too. So just
thank
so great
you very
to hear
much,
your voice.
John. I appreciate that. And, you know, as always, this is something that I always look forward to because it's just so natural for us. And, you know, it's also the fact that it helps me to take my mind off of things. But, you know, the short version is, okay, in the hospital Thursday the 10th, I come out the 11th, I get the catheter out on the 15th. Basically, it's 4 or 5 days of just, you know, grin and bear it and get through it and just don't do anything except to rest. That's it.
Good.
So we can only hope.
And we'll get the full skinny on that when we do 221. And by that point, my number two son will be married. So we got that to look forward to as well. I know these kids today.
Well, you are a grandpappy too.
Yes, I am.
Jesus.
All right, my man. Well, listen, have yourself a great rest of the week. And we will talk again very, very soon.
All right. And to all of you listening, as always, we thank you and we appreciate the fact that you are still with us, and we will talk to you all very, very soon. Thanks a lot.